Welcome to the Fairest Love Podcast, where we share spiritual and practical ideas for how to live family life with a beautiful, self-sacrificing love. On the podcast today, we have the privilege of speaking with Courtney Brown from the Ruah Woods Institute. The Ruah Woods Institute has created a K-12 Theology of the Body curriculum that equips teachers and parents with church-approved tools for forming boys and girls in their God-given identity. Courtney Brown will be discussing this curriculum as well as how parents can see the value of sharing these truths to their children at all stages. Thank you, Courtney, so much for being on our show today.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you for having me on, Mary.
We're really excited to kind of dive into this theology of the body curriculum that you have, but can you first tell us a little bit about Ruah Woods Institute and how it was founded?
Sure. So Ruah Woods was founded in 2008 here in home bases in Cincinnati. We were founded as a ministry that was going to dedicate teaching people the teaching of theology of the body. So we started out as just having small groups here coming and learning and listening. And at the time, Christopher West had his series, The Gift, and the stuff he was doing through the TOB Institute. So we held kind of small groups there. And then in 2010, they brought on myself and a coworker to do teen evangelization. So my job at the time was to try to bring theology of the body. We had the curriculum through Ascension Press at the time, which I helped a little bit to help write that with Brian Butler and Jason Everett. And so I came and my job was to try to bring this teaching as to many people in Cincinnati, teens specifically. So I started a discipleship group. It was called Kenosis, which became more of a leadership formation, a lot of fruit. And then I chased my dream job and became a principal. So I left in 2015, but it was at that point that the ministry started to discern about writing a K-12 curriculum. We started on the high school curriculum, which was basically an online-based approach with the USCCB's framework, theological framework, but then decided in prayerful discernment and through some kind of pushing of the Archbishop here in Cincinnati and the superintendent here in Cincinnati to we ever think about writing a K-8 curriculum. So in 2016, brought on authors, and then our ministry took a pivot in a certain respect where we were still doing on-site classes, but then moved into this world of dedicating, of bringing this teaching to K, to pretty much kindergartners all the way up to 12th grade. So I came back in 2023 as executive director here now, just to continue to move our curriculum in many states. Right now, I would say we're in every state in a way. We're in about 600 schools. Technically, I would call them homeschools or varied, but we're probably in about 290 homeschools and parents who just purchase our stuff. And then we also have parish DRE programs that use our K-8 curriculum, and then youth programs that use our 9-12 curriculum too. So we've expanded, and now our goal is to try to get it into as many schools and parishes as possible with the intent of hoping to essentially help schools learn and parishes learn what can they do to inculcate their entire culture with Christian anthropology. And JP2's vision that he lays out, theology of the body, is the best expression of that in our church. So what we do, we exist here. And the reason we have the name Ruah is it comes from Genesis. That's where we hear it first. But actually, most people know the breath of life, right? And that's where we took it, this breath of God, that is his spirit that is imbued into our lives and creating us in his image and likeness. And so our ministry is very much dedicated to having that culture here. But we also want to extend that charism as best we can to help schools, parishes, and homes have that kind of permeate within themselves. And JP2 offers a clear way for us to do that. So we exist to try to help that mission, to help that, help create that as best we can to help you do that within your home, your parish that you find yourself in, and the schools, if your kids attend school and whatnot. So
that's great. And how would you say you start with, I mean, you said you started with the high schoolers, that's kind of how it all began. And then you started into the K-8. How did you go about discerning, okay, how we're going to present this information, which as an adult reading Theology of the Body from Pope St. John Paul II, it's simple in its certain form, but then it's also very complex. So how did you go about discerning what to include in each grade level?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. It is complex. And Obviously, John Paul II didn't write it to, for, he wasn't writing it for us per se. And then what I mean by that is like with our particular vocabulary. And he was writing it to try to make a new argument, a new breath to support Paul VI teaching Humanae Vitae. And what he did was is he went back to man's story, you know, the beginning, where we are now, and then where are we headed. So in order to take these concepts, we had to think, well, what is our anthropology? What's our story? So the that word story is actually kind of important. It's how we remember things. It's how myth is passed through cultures. We have a story. I always think it's amazing that everybody knows Genesis. It's a whether or not you want to make a case that God doesn't exist or anything like that, but for some reason, even people who don't know much about religion or theology know that story. So there's something about the power of how story teaches us, creates cultures, creates values, things of that nature for something to work. So we use story to teach these concepts. For example, original solitude is where Adam awakens out of being created. We get in Genesis 2:1, it says man's not good to be alone. John Paul II talks about Adam becoming aware, this self-autonomy, this self-determination, about knowing who he is in relation to the world, just by the fact that he's walking and naming things, and who he is in relation to God. And from that interaction, they come to this conclusion that he shouldn't be alone. So from out of the gate, we see that Adam experiences a certain type of need for companionship or relationship. Now, John Paul II is taking that objective teaching of the church, which has never changed, and added actually a subjective element in a certain respect, or even the objective reality that we have a body that also communicates that our body is also communicating this interior immaterial by saying we're made for another. So our body depicts that too as well. So we use a story like Blueberries for Sale, which is a classic. For those who enjoy reading, know it's a Colquitt Award winner. I don't know if I even said that right. But we use award-winning books. I always like to say we use books that stand the test of time versus those that are trendy in time. And I always make the joke that like Captain Underpants, although funny, probably not going to stand the test of time. But this book, you know, Sal goes around and recognizes she gets lost and follows the bear and then realizes you're not my mother, and you're not my mom, you're a bear. And then the little bear follows the mom, you're not my mom, you're not a bear. And I don't know why that we have to say this, but that's becoming more a profound statement in our culture where, and I'll step back for a second, we now have this story that's being in culture is being told that we make our identity, we choose our identity, and our body is mutable. Now, on the surface level, that's the gender conversation. But if you really steer deep down inside, what's really going on is forgetting that we've already had an identity that's already been given to us. So we stand in a spot where what we want students to know is that when you search for your identity, it's kind of ironic that you continue to search in these external things, even though you may be feeling them on the inside, and then you attach labels on that, versus that we have a God who's already given us an identity. And that our identity really needs to be found in him. So what we want to do is we want to help our students, our kids, get in touch with the one who has given them that identity, and that their body actually communicates who they are and who God is. So that it's good. This is good. And as they get older and they start to experience weird things or these kinds of things, you can always bring back to the celebratory that this is something to celebrate, that you are a young boy, that means you're a son and you're a daughter of God. So using stories helps us to be able to like have them think and move in the mind of their experience and have that dialogue with them through the stories that we use. For example, another one that we use in terms of like even to depict the problem with narcissism, right? We this the Greek myth of Narcissus, the man dies because he can't stop looking at himself. So that's the nature of the story. So we know in our adult lived experience, the more inverted our gaze, our look is on ourselves, the more anxiety starts to creep in, the more things we're hard on ourselves. We play a negative tape, you know? And so if we continue to focus there, it's kind of a terrible existence. So what our Lord does is he calls us out of that gaze and into his gaze, right? And so narcissist is a great story to talk about that, right? That's a term that's being used now. He's a narcissist, they're a narcissist, and it's kind of being misused. But essentially what we see there is the attack of selfless gifts. So to teach the theme of being the gift of self and how do we do that, we use stories like Narcissus. We also use a story called The Quilt Maker's Gift. St. George and the Dragon, Mafaro's daughter. Pretty much the gift of self is permeated throughout every story we use in K-5. Sixth to eighth grade, we start bringing in literature and the art to try to depict this more and draw students more into that, to where we're really wanting to uproot what our culture is doing, because the materialistic nature by which our kids are being formed and our kids are being kind of like reducing the human person in their value based off what they can accomplish or what they can achieve or what they have. So we have to combat that. As parents, we have to create culture that attacks that culture. And it doesn't necessarily mean always to like throw away the baby with the bathwater, but it essentially means to move them out of the system that continues to do that too, and try to find ways in which they can discern. And I mean, little kids, that's not what I'm talking about. As they get older, we want to create that place for that. So we use story to really kind of break open JP2's teachings quite a bit.
And that's different too, I think, with just the idea of considering integrating, like the integration of things that have been around, like you said, like books that are kind of timeless in that nature of like those kinds of things that maybe the parents have even seen or read those books and never have thought about it in that capacity of how to, communicate that identity. Have you ever, are there any experiences or even just communication with parents that you said you work with a lot of homeschooling parents, but then also schools. Do you ever notice that they have there's is there anything that they're kind of it's difficult for them to incorporate when working with this program or even just with theology of the body in general that it's hard for them to kind of facilitate in their own homes?
Yeah, so I would say the biggest roadblock is always going to be time. And what I mean by time is our system as it currently is structured, what we place value in as a culture as a whole, we're busy. We're extremely busy. Even if you're homeschooling, you still feel the pressure of everything you have to do in a day. Whether it's your job, whether it's keeping the house in order, and the number of kids you have compiles on that more and more. With a school, it's actually no different. There's time and the amount of what they need to do in a day, it can feel overwhelming. So what I always suggest is to think about time differently. And I know this is going to sound, this is so easier said than done, but when I come across schools, I give them ideas as to like actually flipping the paradigm as into what's the most important thing, plan that first, and then everything else gets planned. And actually what starts to happen is when you allow this space to have kids be able to stop, reflect on their dignity and others' dignity, to see themselves as a child of God and how others are a child of God, we have to give them time to do that. Because if we keep moving them along to the next thing, in a lot of ways, there's a valid criticism that we're continuing to create workers versus like kids who are actually being formed to great virtue. So that I'm talking to schools, of course, but if we stop, step back, and think, okay, what's the most important things for us to do right now? When it comes to a culture of prayer, that culture of prayer in a school, I would say a lot of times that's probably where a lot of my work and a lot of our work is to help them see how they could do that. And it actually creates a ritual, and it creates so much more time and space and other things that they're struggling with, specifically with anxiety, discipline issues. Those are there even when you pray, but it's so much easier to deal with when you do. But for a home, this is me personally speaking. I'm not the best. I'm constantly telling myself I have to get better. So I say that first, but one thing, being available and taking the time, even with our curriculum, to say, hey, we're gonna read this story together and then have a conversation about that. One of the things that we often think when we need to bring in theology of the body is when something happens to your kid or they say something. Like my other day, my son said something, that show's really bad. There's a lot of gayness in it. And I was like, where did he get that from? And in my head, I was like, well, he could have gotten in 20 different spaces, right? But that's a moment to talk to him about, well, what do you mean by that? Like, let's say he's 9. So like, what do you mean? What is, like, let's talk through that. So a question of inquiry could lead to a discussion of whether or not is he ready to have a conversation or is he not? So making yourself available at those, like, I'll call them human moments, is where theology of the body is also implicated, because we're talking about Christian anthropology here. This is something, as when they're very little, you're forming that relationship to where they can trust you. So bringing in our curriculum in a homeschooling setting that's designed K-5 is 9 lessons, and we chose 9, not arbitrarily, but that idea of novena, the idea of moving those 9 days. So, and they're meant to be about 35 to 40 minutes long. A lot of these stories, parents probably have already read to their children, but how we give the questions that you should ask that would speak to those themes of theology of the body. So if you were to just take time and say, okay, we're gonna dedicate once a month to where we're gonna focus on this theme of who are ourselves as human persons, that's really, really not what you would tell your kids. But that could be helpful. The 6th, 7th, and 8th grade gets a little bit more in depth in the conversation. So if you're a part of self of a co-op, it's a good idea to try to get a teacher to come in or a parent to come in. I've done that a couple of times. And in high school, the same. Just getting dedicating time, making it something good, making it something to celebrate is helpful. So when I use that word time, I know that was a tad bit long-winded to just say that we just got to make the time for it. But that's usually the biggest roadblock. There was 1 year, I wouldn't recommend this, but if you think that your kids can cable it, more was one time I was traveled with a family of like 4 or 5 families that were all related. During their summer, an hour a day, they went and came and talked to me about theology of the body. It worked out fine, but that is not something I would necessarily recommend. But there, you could think of so many different ways to do it, as they get older. But it's really, that's kind of, and not to think, I think what a lot of times we want to react to the surface level things that come out, but remember the stuff that's undercurrent is really what we're trying to start with. Like the idea of, like, what does it mean to be a human person? Big concept, big question, but it means to love, and it means to understand that we're created for God and we're created to love others and things like that. So.
Yeah, and that's the question that's the hardest to answer in culture today. So that's the one you start with. You had mentioned, so you have homeschooling and you were talking about the time. I love that aspect of time. Have you obviously parents who homeschool, there's usually a parent that's home with their child kind of working and walking through that with them. Do you have like a supplemental for parents who have their children in the schools that help the parents stay informed as well as to what their child's learning through this curriculum?
Yeah, so on our website, we have a downloads page. We just created what we call our parent engagement piece with the curriculum. And each lesson has basically what it is it's a short synopsis. And it was designed for schools to send home, here's what the lesson was. And then it has a summary of the lesson, some concepts. Then it has suggested questions you could talk if you feel you have time for that, or activities you can do with your we tried to keep it to where it was something that was within your daily rituals as a family, and then suggested prayers you can pray together. So there is an element of that being a part of the lesson, and we're starting to move our minds and ideas that we could do to really help empower parents bring this message more. Our curriculum is a way to do that. But also, I would say, as any family that would be coming and asking for advice, you know, just when don't forget how human we are, and that your daily rituals as a family is so profound in the formation of your children. It's so profound that I'm not saying it. You don't need me, and you don't need Bishop Barron. Of course, you need people, right? I mean, we need experts. There's no question. But I'm telling you how profound just the things you do on the boring, mundane day to day, and infusing God into that, and teaching your kids to see God in those moments. Sacrament of the moments is such a huge thing. We did, and hear me out for a second. When I say this, I'm not oversimplifying it. Because of how fast-paced and technology has become, the desire for more embodied experiences are incrementally getting higher. And I mean embodied. I mean, like, make it. I'm convinced now more than ever that when I tell my kids we're going to go fishing and we don't, it hits them harder than it did 10 years ago. Do you know what I'm saying? So just that we want embodied experiences. So our program and our high school is online, and we're moving it to print again, because that's how dedicated we are to wanting to create embodied experiences for the home, for parents, for schools, because I am telling you, like, I think when I was principal, I used to joke that we were going to have a tagline as that we offer full human instruction, that we're getting to a point where the technology is so, so good, so advanced, that the more we rely on it, the less we become reliant on each other and human, and it's going to have implications. I don't know all of them, but a few. So like, for example, I know you said you were newly married. When I was newly married, my family never sat down to eat together when I was growing up. So a child of divorce makes sense. I was very busy. I was go, go, go all the time. I was an athlete, student council president. I mean, I was super busy. When I got married, it took me at least 4 months to get used to sitting down and having a conversation with someone at dinner, because I never did it before. So and each stage of your marriage and each stage of your life with kids is going to change. So you have to adapt and adjust, and they get busy and things of that nature. But I can't emphasize how important that is. So that's where you'll see a lot of the stuff that comes out of RUA as we move forward to working. How do we help families more? It is in a lot of ways to try to help them create those experiences where they can have the tough conversations when they get older. Because if your kid comes to you and says something like, "Dad, I'm questioning my gender. Mom, I'm questioning my gender. Or I feel like I have same-sex attraction." If they come to tell you that, I mean, you've done something right. It's scary and it would hurt and it's hard, but you've done something right. Like, they felt they could tell you that, because this, I don't mean this to, but there's like an article in it, like I read 2 years ago, where they show a kid how to come out to their parents in the process for those parents that aren't in agreement. And I watched the steps. And one of them is when you it's supposed to be, you're supposed to tell them, they can't ask you. And I thought about that, and I thought, that's how subversive the culture is. And I'm not saying the community, I mean the culture, that parents are against you. And if you think about how our stories, and I use Disney as an example, all of the stories that get perpetuated, teens and their experiences, the bad people are the authorities. And it always works out for the teen. Always. It always works out. It's never bad. But we know that that's not reality. Like, reality is completely different. So that's why I go back to, I remember telling my wife, we should show them the real Little Mermaid that was written. She dies. You know. So anyways, but I could go on and on about that, but it was like all of them just like, wow, it always works out. They totally disobey. Everything's good. And it's like, oh, there's something wrong about that. Anyways, so
you can. No, that's a good point to make. I didn't even think about that before. But yeah, what advice would you give to parents who, let's say they've never been exposed. Okay, so their children are in school, they're learning about this incredible curriculum, and they're like, I was never brought up, raised like this. Where can I go to like look at resources, or what should I read, or what advice would you give to parents to kind of help them assist their own child?
So this is a big question. There's a lot that could be said. Just as an FYI, our particular curriculum is heavily focused on Christian anthropology. So we focus on what JP2 did prior to getting to some of the things he talks about with more marriage and sexuality. So our curriculum has a heavy emphasis on the foundations to have those conversations. If you don't know much about theology of the body, and you're trying to learn more about it, the book by Emily Simpson Chapman, it's called These Beautiful Bones, An Everyday Theology of the Body, is a good resource. It's absolutely great resource. It's not a hard read, and so she does an excellent job. Now, when it comes to teaching your kids and just trying to, how do I bring this more and more into my family? There's a lot of resources out there that, like I said, I don't mean to be super simplistic, that could be helpful. But when it comes to the, as you're trying, how do I talk to them about topics such as sexuality, when it gets to that, the two thing three things I'll offer. First is, remember that it's not one conversation, that it's many conversations. Okay, so two, the time that you feel like you need to have this specific conversation, Gerald O'Shea, the title is Gerard O'Shea, or Gerald, I think it's Gerard O'Shea. The title of his is evading me. It's okay. He has a good series on how to have those conversations with your kids. And because if you feel like, I just don't know what to say, I would say an advice on that is also not to be super hard on yourself, because it's okay that the fact that you're having a conversation, there's, you're winning there. It's just, I wouldn't recommend saying things that would license things, like, for example, well, you're gonna have sex anyway, so you might as well just wear a condom, or you might as well take birth control pills. Well, that's actually not good. And I don't mean that just from a moral standpoint, that you wouldn't do that with anything else. Like, you wouldn't be, if your kid was banging his head against the wall, you wouldn't be like, well, here's a helmet. Like, you would remove him from the wall, right? Like, you would try to figure out ways. So to not overcomplicate this by saying things like, if you're, I'm giving that. But then, so he had, but that's what the sexuality part. And then there's another one by Tan Publishing. I think it's called Love Ed. They do, it's a Catholic one, and they do some good work too. And my wife did something with my daughters that I thought was really good. I've done it with my sons, not to the same extent. We have eight children, two girls, six boys. My oldest two daughters, she took them out on a weekend and they went through that stuff. And then my sons, when they're 10, I have three rituals. So my sons, when they're 10, I take them in my office. We talk about, hey, you've been a good boy all this time. And some of them have been bad, but you've been a good boy. But now you have a new mission. We're gonna work on becoming a man. And then at 11 or 12, depending on my kid, and just hearing their conversations, I take them out. And then we kind of talk through things. And I keep it very much specific and asking questions. And then how to word what the meaning of sex is, what's the beauty behind it, why you wait till marriage, and those kinds of things. You just always want to talk about the beauty and the dignity of the body, the dignity of marriage. And one of the things that my kids really enjoy is the affection my wife and I show each other, even when they get grossed out. That's important. Those things are important. The third thing, the tougher questions that are just, we're just trying to start. So Dr. Sodergren, who is our clinical psychologist, I failed to mention, we also have a psychology wing here, if you will, like two parts of the ministry. He's gone around the country to talk about gender dysphoria and issues as such. He and I have done a couple Q&As together on how to talk to your kids, if, in things of that nature, how do you address certain situations. I can't really dive into such a short, but if you ever want that kind of conversation, I'm glad to do that one more specifically. But again, just to reiterate, this, if your kid actually came to you and said that they were struggling with something like this, but the best advice I can give to you is two things for sure. The first is do everything in your power to pray against Satan's voice. He is going to tell you you're a bad parent. This is your fault. You did something. This is all you. Everything you've heard science-wise and things, he is going to be right there, sharp edge your ear. And you need to pray against it, not because you're supposed to say something nice and soft. That's not it. You're praying against any type of reaction that will come across as, in a certain respect, projecting it onto your kid. Because remember, tell yourself the fact that they're coming to talk to you, you've done something right. I mean, you have done something right. So the second thing, so they're praying against that. The second thing is to come with an inquiry mind and in a sense of like, well, can you talk to me more about that? Tell me what's going on. I would suggest you do this in the teenage years for sure. I'd suggest you do this in general because they just are so much more open to you. Now, I'm not saying give license, but at the same time, we have to remember determining their life. It's at some point it's in there in God's hands. So we want to continue to pray. And that's something that I would say when you come through there, you can have an inquiring mind and you can talk more and more about it. And then as they continue to voice it, a couple things happen. They themselves start to see, oh, this is confusing. Oh, I get that. I mean, you've had experiences like that. I've had it too as well, but you're a beautiful young woman, you're a handsome young man, it's something to be celebrated, things like that. Because unfortunately, though, their world is not going to tell them that. Their world is going to tell them, well, the fact that you have this feeling, it means you're it. And so those are we're kind of battling that. So that was kind of like how to do that. Now for the young kids, what I do with my own children is just celebrate as much as I can. When they're they're a young boy, you're a great boy, thank you for being such a good son. The level of affirmation that needs to happen in I this is going to sound, again, I'm not pandering by any stretch, because there's such a void in our culture, it requires us to actually fill a void. And what I mean by that is the culture is, as much as they say they're affirming, the culture does not affirm. It tells you that you have license to do whatever you want, but if you cross a line, you're never to be forgiven, ever. Like, it's so baffling to think they have no shot. So, with kids, just trying to affirm, and I would say this as a youth minister, even the best parents who have some of the best kids, some of the best kids do stupid things sometimes. And we just have to remind ourselves that, okay, there's a way to get through this, there's a way to do this. And that when they're young and they're little, and they make statements, such as my son, my 9-year-old said, it's a bad show, there's gayness in there. Like, I was like, wait, what does he know? Instead of being like, don't say that word, don't say that word, we don't say that word in this house. Like, you would, okay, he doesn't know, he's just saying what he's heard. So let's find out. And then maybe there's something I'm doing, maybe there's something I said, or I do agree, I fall victim sometimes to trusting cartoons. Unfortunately, I would say that's a bad choice on my end, right? So because there's a lot going on there. So there's a plethora of books out there for parents to kind of get acquainted with how to have these conversations. But just as I mentioned and reiterate, what our curriculum can do mostly is to create that culture within your home to try to help build the culture of that we're made in the image and likeness of God, where his sons and daughters, in that you can use that jargon throughout your home. And then when it's not happening, you can step back and assess, like, what's going on? What's our family? As JP2 says, this is the first school of love. Like, where I'm not experienced. What are we doing wrong? Like, just 2 weeks ago, I was in prayer, and God really showed me, like, because our kids are now, we have 20 to two, our kids are all over the place. Our family dinners have been scattered. And what we hadn't adjusted to well was our two daughters being in college. So, and what I mean by adjusted is like we've kind of let their schedule dictate some of our family schedules. I was like, oh, we just need to come back, and reestablish that for our kids. And then we have two boys that have ADHD. So sitting down at dinner is it's quite the adventure. So
Adventure. I mean, anyone who says, I mean, I come from a big family too, so those all the dinners were adventures, honestly, at that point.
that's good
But
to hear. That's good to hear. Because my experience on this, anyways.
yeah, just to kind of round out the conversation, I'm curious your final thoughts on, you said, you know, this started kind of in 2010, and then you know, there's been a lot of change since that time within our culture, as well as within even what children are learning these days in school. So I'm curious how the curriculum has it, how has it changed? Not, I mean, like, obviously you're teaching the truth, but how has it changed in regards to addressing the needs of culture? But then also, how do you see it kind of going forward? How is
Oh
it?
yeah, that's a great question. So from a culture in a school, even so we've seen, at least in some capacity, students' discipline, to school's discipline has changed a bit. How the students talk to each other has changed. Schools have mentioned how that's helped change a bit. They've recognized that. One of the things that anxiety and depression is starting to increase intensely, and a lot of schools don't, I would even say parents, there's a parents, you probably, how do you help your kids when there's limited resources and they're really struggling with anxiety? This is something that's come to us right now, and something that I know our curriculum helps on away, but the additional resources to help teachers learn not just what this teaching is to teach it academically, but how does it apply to our lives? And I mentioned the ritual of prayer, the rituals of such as like how we go about getting ready for class. So one of the things that we started to do is help schools like, here's what theology of the body looks like. The whole culture in your class, I mean, in the school. And then what does it look like in your classroom? What are the expressions that we should really like hone into? So, for example, when we say, I'm just lack of a better term, but when you say like terms that kids use and somehow subvert, things like gender, what does that word even mean? Like, in some capacities, it may be better for a school not to ever use that word and just say sex, like what's your sex? Because gender is so like thrown around. But though having statements that are said that our identity comes from God, we are sons and daughters of God, that directly that word itself will can create permeate a home in their heart. So what we're working towards is really giving schools and parishes, and I say parishes because of the DRE programs, and then working into the homes, like how do we help create the messaging, if you will, the ways in which they can, what's the new vibrancy that we can offer to help subvert? Because gender is a the gender problem right now is exactly that. 10 years ago, it was same-sex marriage. 2014 is when they passed that law. I mean, that was when that law was passed, and so that they could, federal level. So now, what's going to happen in the next 10 years? I certainly hope it's not what I think it might be, but who knows? And so there's going to be another problem that's going to attack the human person, and we're going to have to battle that as parents. So Ruralwoods will stand as a place that will always be, as a precipice, a place where you can go and find out from experts, how do we handle this crisis? So gender is still kind of new in a way. People are coming to it and they want resources. So we're starting to work more towards offering that. We just got a recommendation from the bishops asking us to do a little bit more for teachers and trying to help through that. So we're certainly trying to do that. And then, but as going down, I would see where Rua stands as a place of an authority to help inculcate anybody's culture, community, to help with that, with the human person. So that I would say that's the biggest thing, and that we see so far. I would often, It's hard to quantify it. I'm trying to get to the point where we could qualify it, but some of the other things they do say, parents greatly enjoy the topics that they're talking about and things like that. So we get a lot of positive feedback from that, and teachers really like that we're integrating it. We're using story, so it's not just this standalone thing, but it actually uses stuff that they can use in scripture. And something that I love hearing, because I'm an educator and I've been, kids will start to make connections, and you'll hear teachers say they just make connections, which is like what you want to do as a teacher. So anyways, so some of that's been going on, but we got there's so much we're going to be working towards to make parents feel more comfortable. So we'll get in there, and once we get it, we'll put it out and say, hey, we have something for everyone to try to figure it, to do this and help them do that. So
That's perfect. Can you tell our audience where they can find? Do you guys have a newsletter? I know you have your website. Is there anything else that our
we
parents?
do the website. You can sign up for our newsletter on the website, ruralwoodsinstitute.org, where you can find a lot of this information. And we're I wouldn't say we're pivoting, but in a way, what we're really wanting to do is really make available a lot of the resources we start kicking in to help teachers learn. We are building a new building on site where it's the institute building, where it'll, can do a we can have 100 people come in. So there'll be more and more, and I would say 2000, and at least to the maybe the January 2026, we'll start having people come in again. We were doing that before we turned our auditorium into a studio. So, but now we're building another institute. So we'll be shaking and moving and grooving in there. So,
Yeah, that's great. That's awesome to hear that it's you're growing too. And also I'm
yeah.
sure it's a great it's great to hear that you're also working with our bishop and all that. Like it's just a good thing to hear that okay, this is needed and it's growing. So thank you so much
It
for
is, yeah. Yeah. Well, you're welcome. And we won't stop. As my board president says, it's like, every his big mantra is every school. And that's obviously the goal, but it's also Pierce. But homes are important too. So,
Perfect.
in fact, that's probably the most important is
Yeah.
homes. So,
Yeah. Thank you so much, Courtney, for being on our show
oh, you're
and
welcome.
being with us, this incredible institute.
All right, well, praise God. Thank you for what you do, Mary. So appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Ferris Love Podcast. In 2024, we want to reach as many people as possible. You can help by sharing this episode with a friend, subscribing to the podcast, or leaving a review. To learn more, visit us at ferrislovshrine.org.